Good morning. So would you, I know you probably get tired of hearing this, but would you just check to make sure that your cell phone is in the off or not disturbed position? And as always, thanks to the people back there who make it possible for those of you who are watching on live stream to join us today. And just remember, if you're within a 25-mile radius of this, you should be here. It's just different. It's just different. Anyway, so no matter who you are, no matter where you are in your spiritual journey, you are celebrated here. I have been asked to announce that on Saturday, March the 9th, that's a Saturday, right? There are paper invites back there. To the Ordinary Life Happy Hour, which is going to be at the Powers House in West U. Sherry and I will be there. I hope that you will be there. I'll bring a deck of cards. You bring whatever. I don't necessarily think I will bring a deck of cards, but do that. So I want to give kind of an interim report about where our Strategic Planning Committee is in responding to the work that the consultant that we hired last year has been. We have met some, one big meeting a few weeks ago, and we're going to meet again next Sunday. I tried to schedule that when people would not be out for spring break, but understand there will be some people out. Last week, I asked you to volunteer, to put your name down on a list to volunteer to serve in one of the four areas that the Strategic Planning Committee has identified where we need service. And those are in the areas of giving and finance, community, communications, and then what I call nitty-gritty matters, which is back-of-the-room stuff and more logistical stuff. Diane Schenke, who has headed up the Joys and Concerns group, and is doing an outstanding job. Thank you, Diane, for what you are doing. Already, we have that in place. Suggested that we break that committee down into those of you who are willing to serve in areas of joys and concerns, social, and then service. And they would have to do, you can talk to Diane more about that, but social concerns would have to do with happy hours, sacred cookies, that sort of thing, service, other matters. So maybe you signed this before and you remember you were offered, if you signed last Sunday, to make three times as much as people who signed today. But I'm going to change that. So if you signed last Sunday and you put in community and you want to be more specific about that, sign again and you will be paid six times as much as those who signed last week. Okay? Is that clear? All right. If you don't sign today, you will be charged. No, that's a joke. So there are two of these clipboards that are going around. I'll put them here, and you can multitask. You can sign while we do the class, okay? So just to be clear, the Strategic Planning Committee is going to meet next Sunday after this gathering. So that's why we're trying to harvest these names now. So taking a clue from one of my teachers, Jim Finley, repetition is not redundant. So I want to just repeat, this will be the last Sunday I'm going to do this. One of the reasons that what we are doing in here is, I believe, important is because though I give a lot of information and talks, probably too much, and I think the information is important, otherwise I wouldn't spend time doing it. The goal is that the information lead to transformation of life. And it's important because in our culture, we live at such a superficial level. And also, these times are designed to break through whatever habits of mind and heart we have that keep us from having a deep experience of the sacred. And I invite you to consider the possibility that being here can change your life. And we're going to talk more about change today and how this change is something that happens instantly after a lot of work. And we seek to penetrate the illusions that keep us from touching and being touched by the reality. So I hope today you experience whatever you mean when we use the word God as a verb. And so with that as our grounding, let's begin in silence. Take a deep breath just to be here. And may grace be in our heads and in our thinking. May grace be in our eyes and in our seeing. May grace be in our ears and in our hearing. May grace be in my mouth and in my speaking. May grace be in our hearts and in our understanding. And may grace be at our ends and at our departing. So being here in this class, either physically or virtually, can be hazardous to your current religious, spiritual, cultural worldviews. And consequently, being here can cause anxiety. Now, it's not my intention deliberately to upset anyone. But given my belief that our primary purpose is ongoing growth, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, relationally, I do want to be very clear that moving from one level of awareness or development to another is not easy. It is difficult and it is anxiety provoking. Now, the fact that many of you who just heard what I said think that you are an exception to that proves my point. Okay, now you know I'm not talking about you specifically, right? I'm talking about the person sitting next to you. So there's an archetype from the Christian religion that's very useful for this, I think. It's in all wisdom traditions. There is a death in the Christian motif or archetype, that death is by crucifixion, willingly undergone, 3 days in the tomb, or what in the Christian tradition is called the dark night of the soul, and then resurrection. But you can't go from an insight into resurrection like that. As Richard Rohr says, you cannot get on a plane in first class and fly from level 2 to level 6. It doesn't work that way. You have to go through each one of the levels. And the second thing I want to say is that even though I write each one of these lessons to stand on its own, there is a connection in this theme of living in the sacred stream, where if you missed out on something, maybe something else is not going to make as much sense. So there is a flow. The stream flows, all right? So fortunately, the talks that are given in here, whether by me or by anybody else, are available in written form, audible form, and video form if you go to the Ordinary Life website. This is the landing page of the Ordinary Life website, which maybe many of you have never seen. Thanks to Wayne Herbert and to Tim Leatherwood, we have a great website. I have nothing to do with this. I give them some content and they do whatever they do with it. But if you want on Tuesday to go back and get the text, the slides, everything having to do with today, if you just go to this website and go to that particular button, you can access all of the talks that have been given here back for ages and ages. Long time. You can do that. A teacher at a major university offered a class in creative writing. And the class was held early in the morning, and consequently many students either missed it entirely or were late. And so the question would come up as people slipped into the class or came the next day, did I miss anything? And so he wrote this. Did I miss anything? Nothing. When we realized you weren't here, we sat with our hands folded on our desk in silence for the 2 full hours. Did I miss anything? Everything. I gave an exam worth 40% of the grade for this term and assigned some reading due today on which I'm about to hand out a quiz worth 50% of your entire score. Did I miss anything? Nothing. None of the content of this course has value or meaning. Take as many days off as you like. Any activities we undertake as a class, I assure you, will not matter either to you or to me and are without purpose. Did I miss anything? Everything. A few minutes after we began last time, a shaft of light descended, and an angel or other heavenly being appeared and revealed to us what each woman or man must do to attain divine wisdom in this life and the hereafter. This is the last time the class will meet before we disperse to bring this good news to all people on earth. Did I miss anything? Nothing. When you're not present, how could anything significant occur? So, everything contained in this gathering is a microcosm of human existence, and it's assembled here for us to look at and examine and ponder, and this is the only place that this opportunity today will be given or will ever be given. It's one place, and I'm glad that you're here. So being here is the essence of doing spiritual work. I don't mean being present in ordinary life, although that's nice. But being here is the essence of spiritual work, and being present is hard. Our spiritual work is to learn to pay attention, to be here, and it takes resources to do that. It takes faith, it takes hope. It takes love. It takes forgiveness. And I hope these are the realities that we move into and experience as we seek to live more and more in the sacred stream. By the way, that poem was written by Tom Wayman, who is a Canadian poet. And I first heard Billy Collins read it on the stage of Jones Hall when there was a reading a long time ago, and those of us who attended were such a small audience, we got to sit, all of us, on the stage at Jones Hall listening to Billy Collins read poetry. It was a hoot. So being present wherever, whenever we are can sometimes be disturbing. And our culture is at the moment very disturbing, which is what we're going to talk about today. Our current national and world condition is giving us a perfect crucible in which to do our spiritual work. However, we can't stay at our current levels of awareness and do and experience the work we need to do. We have to grow, and grow is hard. So sometimes I say things in here that are disturbing. And again, to be clear, that's not my intent. It's not my best interest to upset anybody. A few years ago, I gave in here what someone considered to be a very edgy talk. It's hard for me to imagine ever doing that. But afterwards, that person sent me an email, which I would like to read to you. Just so you will know, what you said was not what you intended, nor what we heard. What we heard, of course, was not what you said, and certainly not what you intended. And our understanding of what you meant was something less than complete, not to mention inaccurate. We nevertheless are very appreciative of what we think we heard you say. That's brilliant. I didn't write it, but I wish I had. That's great. So the theme that I'm offering right now, as you know, is living in the sacred stream. And I got that message from my first reading of this book by Stephen Mitchell called The Gospel According to Jesus. Now, this book was published in 1994. I had placed a request for it, ordered it before there was online stuff, got a journal, saw it, wrote, got the book. And it was available for sale. Now, put this in perspective. In 1994, there was no iPhone. The iPhone would not be invented for another 13 years after this. That's a long time. Now, in 1994, the Jesus Seminar, which is an outshoot of the Westar Institute of Research, had come into existence, but I didn't know anything about it. It would be 10 years before I got involved with the Jesus Seminar. There's a lot that went on in 1994. Some of you might remember. Nelson Mandela was sworn in as the president of South Africa. How many of you remember Nancy Kerrigan? You know, that was the time that the bodyguard for Tonya Harding clipped Nancy Kerrigan, and Tonya Harding got put out of figure skating for the rest of her career. There were some movies out that year, Forrest Gump, which played to horrible reviews, but won an Academy Award, and everybody loved it. The Shawshank Redemption was out that year, one of the great movies of all time. But even a better movie came out in 1994, Schindler's List. Remember Schindler's List? I'm going to talk about it just a little bit at the end. Maybe one of the greatest movies ever made. So in this book, Stephen Mitchell says that his work, he's an expert in Middle Eastern languages, translating Middle Eastern languages. He says that the collection of writings that make up our New Testament has led him to believe that the way that the texts were passed on from one writer to another caused there to be omissions, additions, changes over a long span of time. There was no printing, anything like that, for over a long period of history. And Mitchell and others who have done this historic work have said that if we could go back to the source, and the image he used is, it would be like going back to the origin of a spring. And the spring comes out of the ground and it's pure water, but as it flows along, it gets polluted in one way or another. And so the work of good biblical religious scholarship is trying to get the impurities out and go back to the origin of the stream. There was another book that actually someone I was seeing for spiritual direction told me about. I'd never known about it. Leo Tolstoy's The Gospel in Brief. This is not, you can't get this book on ebook, but Tolstoy is really quite a biblical scholar, and he uses the exact same image of a stream. And then in reading a book given to me by my own spiritual director or assigned to me, reading this book on binding which is about Buddhism. It's a very accessible, difficult, challenging book to read. She is the one from whom I got the image of our being like eddies in the stream that haven't broken loose yet to be part of the flowing stream. So you got the stream of Jesus, the stream of our own identity, and then, of course, there is the cosmic stream of which we are all a part of. So being set free in all of these arenas, or looking at being set free from all of these perspectives, can be terrifying and it can be exhilarating. So I just want to reiterate, we're trying to get clarity about the teachings of Jesus. We want to grow in the understanding of our own selves, and we want to participate consciously in evolutionary cosmology. This is kind of the agenda, okay? Now look at what's going on in our culture. We're in a culture war. There are major ideological conflicts in this country, Middle East. What's going on in the Middle East, Russia, Ukraine. I've had a lot of people give me examples of things that have happened in their own families where a parent or an uncle or somebody has gotten caught up in far right ideology and no longer possible to converse around the table about what's going on. I'll give you an example that slammed me against the wall this week. I subscribe to a newsletter put out by Dan Rather. Remember Dan Rather, the CBS newscaster? Dan Rather actually had his start here in Houston, covering a hurricane, and he got noticed by national news and picked up. So he puts out a newsletter, and the newsletter is called Steady. You could probably go on if you're interested in it, and it's one of those Substack things. I'm not sure I understand what that means, but you can subscribe to it. I'm an old person. Here's a story that was in Dan Rather's newsletter. At the opening of CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, big group, activist Jack Posobiec opened the conference with a fiery speech in which he said that it was the aim of their group to end democracy. To quote him, quote, "We didn't get all the way there on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here," he said, gesturing to the crowd and holding up a cross. Then he said to cheers from the audience, quote, "All glory is not to government, all glory is to God." Now, it may sound like I am oversimplifying, but I don't believe so. I think we are in the crisis we are in today, in the various arenas we are in today, because we have ignored this over here, or here, whichever one you want to look at. Ignorance about these things has affected American culture. Christianity, even the expression we are a part of here at St. Paul's, is in the midst of a crisis far more serious than the Protestant Reformation. I'm not being Chicken Little. I am telling you, this is what the facts are showing. And at the root of this crisis is how people experience and express what we mean when we use the word God. Now, I know some of you have trouble with that word. Just hang on for a minute. But one of the reasons that the church is in trouble today is that culturally, an expression and experience of God has died. And we don't have another one in its place. Now, I want to be clear, God is not dead. But a particular understanding of the meaning of the word God has died. So the last time we talked in here, I mentioned a book. I'm always mentioning books. This book, The Death of the Mythic God by Jim Marion. Jim Marion is a contemporary living Christian mystic in the Catholic tradition, by the way. Catholics make better mystics than Protestants. It's just true. Up until the time, and in this book, Marion puts out these levels of awareness. Now, I want to be clear. This developmental model is about cognitive awareness. There are other developmental models, emotional awareness, spiritual awareness. There are other ways of thinking about how we develop. This is one, just one. But it's an important one. Up until the time of Copernicus, the world lived at the level of mythic consciousness. The whole world. And then when when Copernicus came, that mythic consciousness began to be challenged. Most everybody embraced it except the church, except religious organizations. Okay. So the mythic God lives in heaven, separate from earth, apart from humans. This God created the earth and everything and then left, went on vacation. But sometimes you could get this God's attention if you prayed hard enough and God would say, okay, I relent, I'll cure you, but not him, that sort of thing. And this is the God that sent his son to earth to die for your sins. What I call divine child abuse. Now, when I introduced these a few weeks ago, I said that I think that most everybody who is in this room or watching this is at the level of vision, logic, consciousness. We may not stay there all the time, but that's where most of us live, I think. Occasionally, you may catch yourself, if you're late to an appointment, praying for a parking space. Or it slips back in, you know. But I want you to think about this. God, I love this church. I do. But I want you to think about this. When we invite you to come to worship at St. Paul's, we're inviting you to leave the vision logic level for an hour and go back to mythic consciousness for an hour to sing the hymns and the prayers and the scriptures, the creeds that were written at mythic consciousness, and then you can put that aside when you leave. We are contributing to religious schizophrenia. And I'm inside the church. I want to keep inside the church. I'm grateful that I get to say this sort of stuff inside the church. But folks, if we don't change, we are participating in a death wish. It's just the statistics show it. Doing what I just described, going back from vision logic to mythic consciousness for an hour a week is so hard. Some people in here can't do it. They won't do it. Or they go and they don't participate. Then they go for a variety of reasons. Now, what I'm shooting for is that we would all move to the psychic consciousness level. To move away from vision logic and go to psychic consciousness. When I was in graduate school, John A.T. Robinson had a book called Honest to God. It was back in the 60s, and a lot of people read that book. It's still out. It's still a great book. And in that book, John A.D. Robinson suggested that we stop using the word God for a generation. And people loved that idea but didn't do it. You know, the Jews will not utter the name of God. Muslims allow no image of God. Buddhists will not even speak of God. But Christians, we talk about God all the time. We know what God is like, what God is not like. We know who God favors, who God doesn't favor. We know what football team God supports. We know what God approves of and what God doesn't approve of. And the result is that most Christians end up worshiping not God, about whom nothing can be said. Got that? But an invention of our imaginations, or somebody else's imagination about God. So what do we do without the mythic God? Well, the first answer I have is that we have daily spiritual practice, and that we get real clear about these things right here. That's the first thing to do. If you want to contribute to the cognitive aspect of your daily spiritual practice, delve into one of these or all of these in some way. There are resources out there where you can do this. I'll try to mention some books from time to time. We have to work to know what Jesus really taught. We're going to begin with some of that next week. If we were in some other religious tradition, we'd delve into the history of that religion, but we want to try to get to the source of the teaching. And we want to grow into our understanding of our own true selves. Who is this? Who am I? Who are you? And then we want to participate in the evolutionary process that seeks for the healthy growth of all that is and all who are. That's that in a short line. It is that simple. It is that complicated. Okay. Now, if what I've said so far about God is disturbing to somebody, I just want to be clear. Jesus did not believe in a God who is external to human experience. Read the Gospels. Jesus saw God in you, in the flowers, in everything. And once we see with the eyes of Jesus that we are not separate from the divine dimension, and language is so unhelpful here, once we realize that no outside God is ever going to intervene to solve the problems of this place, how can we then, relying on guidance from our true identity, which is made in the image of God, work to solve the problems that face us? Now, I don't know what spiritual practice is best for you. I do know that if you don't have one, you won't grow in these areas. That's just it. Ken Wilber says that the only technique that has been proven scientifically to raise consciousness in adults is meditation. So if you expect to raise your level of consciousness from mythic to vision logic to psychic consciousness to even beyond, you will not get there without some form of meditation. Sorry, just ain't gonna happen. I think more important is, when it comes to spiritual practice, what's your intent? What do you want? Why are you doing this? It's the greatest question maybe Jesus ever asked of those who followed him. What do you want? What are you seeking? You remember how I said at the beginning of today's talk that this is hazardous to your health? them. There's a fierceness about Jesus' teaching that we just want to downplay. Living with clear-eyed, no BS psychic consciousness is something every one of us is wary of. Me too. We know about it. We know that there is a wholeness that transcends us. And we also know that we live in fragmentation. This is why I say that we suffer from what I call depth deprivation. As Jim Finley puts it, we are missing out on the gift of our own lives. We are all addicted to habits of heart and mind that contribute to our unhappiness, and the unhappiness that contributes, and the habits of heart and mind that contribute to the unhappiness of others. And it's these habits of heart and mind that keep us from being who we truly are. Right? So now we have to work at being present and staying present to this in the midst of this current cultural war. And this is what I mean when I say we've got to trust the sacred stream in all ways to sustain us in every way and to protect us from nothing. Think of Jesus in the Christian tradition as our archetype, sustained, not protected. So our work in the culture war is to be those whose very presence in the world makes this world a better place despite what's going on. Now here's something, and maybe this is just me, maybe I'm projecting it onto you, so please forgive me. So if I am projecting, then you're about to hear my personal confession. I think it's possible to know all the stuff that I talk about in here, even agree with it. But still there is a part of us that wants to make a deal with the mythic God, you know. And so my deal with the mythic God goes something like this. God, I really know about this psychic consciousness, and it really sounds great, and I really want to move there, if that's possible. But when I get there, could I still be me? And you know, that way, then I'll get the respect I deserve. And people will know that I have moved to the psychic level of consciousness. I'll be somebody. We're all like that disciple who wants to sit at the right hand. To whom Jesus did not have kind things to say. So what about that cultural war out there? How do we go beyond the mythic level in that world that doesn't go beyond the mythic level? Well, I've got some observations, responses, suggestions. One of them is that fragmentation in the outer world comes from fragmentation internally. All of us have participated in creating a culture for decades now, and with accelerating speed, where the three main modalities of being are being fragmented, being numb, and being withdrawn. And all of us participate in that. And we've got to do our own personal work at reversing those trends, those addictions of mind and heart within ourselves. Where we are didn't happen overnight. It's not going to get resolved overnight. So go back to the talk that I gave some time ago at the beginning of this theme on the importance of patience and endurance. Our culture has sold us a bill of goods. Patience is not a personality trait. Endurance is not a personality trait. It's a skill. And if you want to learn to grow in patience and endurance, have a daily spiritual practice. Sit on your cushion with nothing to do for 20 minutes except pay attention to what your crazy mind does. And do it every day for 9 months. And then let's talk about it. It takes endurance to do this. When I first got licensed to practice psychology, I had a job at Baylor College of Medicine. I was hired by a psychiatrist there to work with alcoholics and their families for 2 years. That's some of my patient population for 2 years. I learned so much. I learned so much from those people. One of the things I learned is that when alcoholics quit drinking, they quit in an instant. Now, it may take them years to get there, but they quit like that. And also, quitting is a gift that they work for. I know that's paradoxical sounding, but if you talk to anybody who is in the process of being a, what they call a recovering alcoholic, they will tell you their non-drinking is a gift. Not something that they achieved by willpower. It was a gift. But they had to do the work of being able to be open to receive that gift. So those people taught me the deeper meaning of up until that time phrases that I'd just sort of seen as fluff, like one day at a time. That's a profound teaching. Just one day at a time. I mean, you can't live more than one day at a time anyway. Now is all we've got. I was gifted with a deeper understanding of what it meant about take it easy. It means don't grab, but receive. And then somewhere along the way back then, somebody gave me a copy of a poem or a little thing printed by a woman named Portia Nelson. It's called An Autobiography in 5 chapters, and it goes like this. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm hopeless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It still takes me a long time to get out. Chapter 3, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's a habit, but my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5, I walk down another street. We have to walk down another street. Doing the same thing over and over, experiencing a different result, is indeed the definition of insanity. I'll say this a different way. If our moving to the psychic consciousness level does not change the way we view the world, our economic beliefs, our ability to form and be part of inclusive communities of justice, there's no reason to think we've made the move. So I'm not talking about some cosmetic religious change. I'm talking about a change, an encounter of such immensity that everything shifts in perspective. Another thing that we could do is that we might consider how we have contributed to this situation. Mythic level consciousness wants to blame others. 23 years ago, we had an opportunity that we squandered. It was called 9/11. Remember 9/11? When it happened, we had the world's sympathy and empathy. Yeah, it was 23 years ago, that long ago. Our political leadership lied to us about weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew it. Look what happened in the world. Not a good outcome. The attack on Israel by Hamas was horrible. No question about it. It was their 9/11. And in my opinion, they have squandered their response. And now anti-Semitism is aflame all over the world. But people who live at the mythic level believe everything can be settled by war. And we've bought into that. We have wars and fights about everything. We fight cancer. We have wars on poverty. There's a war on crime. There's a war on drugs. So at the mythic level, people are seen primarily as winners and losers. So the world is divided. And if you're on what the world sees as the losing side, or if that is your experience of being on the losing side, the result is you're frustrated and angry. And that anger turns into bitterness that causes you to be blind to everything else. So what's going on? So now we're about to enter, some newscasts tell me how many days it is to the next election. We're getting ready for the battle of battles between the Republican and the Democrat. I have to fight traffic on the way home and then turn on the news to see what conflicts are in the news, which is really fueled by a battle between competition to get my view. And then when I'm tired of that, I turn on whatever's on to watch some crime scene investigation thing. That's how we entertain ourselves. So the question that comes from the heart of compassion or from the heart of Jesus is, where do you hurt? And we all do. But we don't ask that to people on the right. We just want them to change their minds. So how have we contributed, consciously or not, to an environment where, according to the most recent figures I could find, over 65 million of our citizens, I'm talking about voting people now, think that a thrice divorced, 91 times indicted person who adores Putin should be our president? But that's our culture. And the people who think this are not evil, bad people. They have what, given their worldview, are valid reasons. And I think what part people on the other side of that equation have played in that might be something worthy of consideration. Further, it should not be surprised that hurt people, or another way of saying that is that people who live at the mythic level and are angry are like teenagers with cans of gasoline and matches, and resenting fire for being itself isn't helpful to anyone. Now, just keep in mind, people who live at the mythic level of religion take delight in the fact that other people are going to burn in hell. That's their worldview, not that they're bad. And trying to get them by force or reason to see another point of view is trying to argue with a colorblind person to get them to see green. They can't do it. So what we can do is stand by with bandages and ointments. That's not all we can do. I don't mean that we shouldn't be politically and socially active. We should be. Another thing that we can do is work to become mindful human beings. I know you think you are. I think I am. I actually have a certificate in teaching mindfulness. I'm a certified spiritual director. That's what I mean. You know how when a boat goes through water, it leaves a wake behind it? And many of us can leave wakes behind us that we have no awareness of. I love coffee. And I love this coffee mug. As a matter of fact, I got a newer version of this. I can't pronounce the name. They make rice cookers. It's so good, coffee mug. It keeps my coffee hot all day long. I can put it in and keeps it, and it locks and so tight. I can throw this in my briefcase. It will not leak. And I put it in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I take it out and have coffee. It's as hot as it can be. You almost always see me having this, right? And so one day I bring it to church, and I put it on the table in the sacristy and do the first service. And then I walk over here with this, like this. I guess the top open. I am slinging coffee everywhere in the sanctuary building, all the way across Jones Hall, all the way up the steps, into here, until finally Tim Leatherwood says, "Hey, you're spilling coffee all over the place." I teach mindfulness. I'm the only one anything like that ever happens to. We can walk down another path mindfully. And a huge thing that we can do is be aware of the projections we make onto other people. In her wonderful book about talking, Fierce Conversations, Susan Scott says, "Being understood rather than being interpreted is so rare you could charge admission." Now, a projection is when the current psychological awareness I have, both consciously and unconsciously, leaves me and goes on to you. And I think I know what you're up to. I give you a simple example. You have a friend who is just telling you that a parent has died. And you say, "I know exactly what you're going through." That's a lie. You don't mean to lie, but you don't know what that person's going through. That's a projection of what you went through when your parent died, so that you can say, "I think I know what you're going through." You don't know. Or somebody goes through a divorce or loses a job or gets a cancer diagnosis or has a child who goes wrong or whatever. We don't know. We project. And then the second thing, I didn't put this in the notes, but to be aware of, is the transferences that we make. Transference is when the unconscious content, unfinished content, usually historic, of myself goes out onto somebody else, so that an unfinished part of my life is projected onto somebody else. We usually do that with our mates, our intimate partners, but we can do it with our pets. You have a pet. I'm sure you do that. I do that. We do it with our institutions. We don't call her mother church for nothing. We do it with countries, not call land of our fathers for nothing. So that's another suggestion that we can do in the current situation to stop othering others. And of course, we can vote. By which I don't mean just casting a ballot, but being informed. The outcome of the upcoming presidential election is monumental. There is no doubt about that. And there's a lot that can happen between now and then. But here's the thing. No matter what the outcome of the election is in November, afterwards, our country's still going to be divided. And there's still this work to do, no matter what. Now, for those of us who think that we are at the vision logic level, and we try to be there, what do we do? I mean, there are models in history for us to adapt. The Jewish people lived in exile for years and years and years. The early followers of Jesus were persecuted beyond belief. Some of them went into the desert, called desert fathers and mothers. They're the ones that preserved the Dead Sea Scrolls and a lot of other things. Some of them went underground. Or think about Native Americans in this country who, in spite of what were done with them, to them maintained their traditions and their religions. You can read Braiding Sweetgrass, learn something about that. Look what African slaves brought to this country in terms of a spirituality and a resilience that we're still just beginning to maybe appropriate and learn something about. I'm sure you know about the Jane Elliott experience. I played a clip of her in here years ago. Jane Elliott is a social activist who, speaking to a group like this one day, with way more courage than I would ever have, said, let me ask you a question. How many of you, knowing what black people experience in this culture, would be willing to live as a black person in American culture? Would you hold up your hand? And she said, maybe you didn't hear what I said. So she asked the question again. She's a smart ass. I would never do that. So she repeated the question, no hand went up. And she said, so you know, think about the Dalai Lama, who's been living in exile from Tibet for decades now. Or think about one of my heroes, Thich Nhat Hanh, lived in exile from Vietnam because he wouldn't take sides. Another thing that we could do, and there are so many more suggestions, is that we could become like Schindler's, the man I mentioned in the movie that was out when Stephen Mitchell's book came out. Oskar Schindler saved over 1,000 Jewish lives by hiring Jews to work in his factories in Germany when they were being put in death camps. I didn't give a careful look at this morning's paper, but I did see that looks like what's going to be eventually a successful move about school vouchers in Texas. our education system is hurting. People who are gays, lesbians, transsexual people are hurting. There's anxiety in that community about if the next step will be a reversal on same-sex marriages in this country. We're moving in that direction. So there are people who need the sanctuary of love and compassion and understanding, and we could be Schindler's. All of us could do that. Mythic consciousness is not kind to people. So we individually and collectively can be safe places for people. You know, I think I can put the entirety of today's talk in one sentence, and somebody's saying, I wish he had. We could go home. So when you go out from here today, pretend in the living of your life that you are in training to be the next Dalai Lama. No matter where you go this week, no matter what happens, remember this, you carry precious cargo, so watch your step, and I'll see you here next week. Thank you.